ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मन्वन्तरे गृह्णन्ति अवयो ब्रह्मं स्थानि नो वद शृण्वथम् मन्वन्तरे हरिर्जन्म कर्माणि च महीयश गृह्णन्ति कवयो ब्रह्मं स्थानि नो वर्षिण्वृतम् Mandantare,
Mandantare,
during the change of Mandantaras. One mano following another. Hare,
Hare,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Janma,
Janma,
appearance.
Appearance.
Karamani,
Karamani,
and activities.
And activities.
Cha, also, Mahiyashaha, of the Supremely Glorified, Grihnanti,
described,
Kavayaha, Kavayaha, the great learned persons who have perfect intelligence. Brahman,
Brahman,
O learned Brahmana,
Sukadeva Goswami,
Tani,
all of them,
Naha,
Naha,
to us,
Vada,
Vada,
please describe,
Shrimbatam,
who
are very eager to hear. Translation. O learned Brahmana, Sukadeva Goswami, the great learned persons who are completely intelligent describe the activities and appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead during the various manvantaras. We are very eager to hear about these narrations. Kindly describe them. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has different varieties of incarnations, including the guna avatars, manvantara avatars, lila avatars, and yuga avatars. All of them which are described in the Shastras. Without reference to the Shastras, there can be no question of accepting anyone as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, as especially mentioned here, Grihnanti Kavayaha, the descriptions of various incarnations are accepted by great learned scholars with perfect intelligence. At the present time, especially in India, so many rascals are claiming to be incarnations, and people are being misled. Therefore, the identity of an incarnation should be confirmed by the description of the Shastras and by wonderful activities. As described in this verse by the word Mahiyasha, the activities of an incarnation are not ordinary magic or jugglery, but are wonderful activities. Thus, any incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be supported by the statements of the Shastras and must actually perform wonderful activities. Parikit Maharaj was eager to hear about the manus of different ages. There are 14 manus during a day of Brahma, and the age of each manu lasts for 71 yugas. Thus, there are thousands of manus during the life of Brahma. Sukadeva Goswami is wanting to hear about the activities of the manus, the different manvantars. Now, these manvantars, we generally see, they're Shaktivesh. Sometimes the Lord Himself appears as one of the manus. But basically, you have all these different kinds of avatars, guna avatars, manvantara avatars, lila avatars, yuga avatars. They're all coming for the purpose of performing the activities that are establish the Lord and His process, the process how to go back to Him, give example, give direction. All these activities are being presented. So, means the Lord, He has various activities that He does, various purposes that He does. So basically we see is one of the most important is the Lila avatars and all these other avatars, because they then establish the proper relationship with the Lord and the activities that the Lord has. So we become attracted to the Lord and we make the Lord as our goal in life. So many different activities are there, so many different aspects are there within our existence that we must see in relationship to the Lord. And so then, so many of these are done. So manvantaras for the humans become very important because they establish what is human life, what is the proper method of behavior for human beings. Because all these other living entities in the universe, they're basically in that position due to their karma, and they're living off that karma. Whatever reactions they've gotten, then they're getting the benefits of that. But the actual making of the one's fortune is done as human beings. So it's the most delicate of all the different aspects of the universal affairs, universal activities. Because the human beings then are able to perform activities that will take them back to Godhead or bring them nearer to the Lord. So the manvantara is very important because their duty is to see that the instructions for mankind is given and that it is followed properly. So Prabhupada points out is that these different incarnations, then they must be mentioned in the shastras. All these different shastras, then they mention the different kinds of avatars of the Lord, unlimited avatars. But if someone's not mentioned there, then we can understand they're not in that category. Because otherwise people take it too cheaply. They start their own, they become God, or if they're not so ambitious, they start their own religions or their own movements. But not having proper connection with the Lord, not having proper parampara, or not being mentioned in the shastras as incarnations, then they bewilder the people. They do things that they should not do. They create trouble. And people are much more willing to listen to something that is not correct than something that is correct. Because something that's not correct, then is a very simple process. What comes into somebody's mind, according to the modes of nature, then they present that, they make a philosophy out of it, and present it to others. And others who are also under the modes of nature, it becomes very easy and obvious for them what to do. Very direct, very simple, straightforward. Or in another aspect, is sometimes what they say doesn't make any sense because of the modes of nature. And people who are happy to hear things that don't make any sense, then they also then follow such people, that this must be religion. So either religion you can't understand because it is so, you know, amazingly put in their wording and all that, or it's so easy to understand, like that, one or the other. So then it becomes very easy. So this is, you know, many people will say, oh, this is so nice. But the actual religion, the actual dharma, is very subtle and may be difficult to understand because it cannot really be understood with the mundane intelligence, the mundane mind. So we may not just immediately grasp on it, you know. It just doesn't immediately grasp because it's something different from what we're used to. So, because we're used to, religion means something we're used to. We do an activity, we get a result, you know, and that result is pleasing to the mind and senses. Or we are dissatisfied with trying to please the mind and senses, we're frustrated, and therefore we want a religion that does away with mind and senses. You know, it's the opposite. Just by making it the opposite, it makes it spiritual, like that. You have religion for fruit of result, or then you spiritualize it by just doing the opposite, like that. So these two things are generally what is taken up. And then they make a lot of sense to the intelligence of the mind because they're material. But the spiritual process is different. It's very different.
We see a qualified person as Arjuna, born in the Surya dynasty, greatly on the platform of Kshatriyas, and their emperors. Within the Kshatriya community, then the most qualified are those who become the emperors. And here we see is he is also a devotee of the Lord. He's faithful. But for him, even the eternal philosophy is difficult to perceive immediately. You cannot just, with your own intelligence, work it out. It doesn't seem so obvious as in Bhagavad Gita. It must be described. So according to Guru and Sadhu and Shastra. So with these together, then it becomes easier to understand. So nowadays, many like to make up their own ideas, their own philosophies, take a bit here, take a bit there. But this has nothing to do actually with Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a different thing. A devotee has 26 qualities, a devotee. Of those, one is main. That is the Srup Lakshana. That of just that surrender to Krishna. That dependency upon Krishna. All the other 25 qualities, they're called Tatastha Lakshanas. Lakshana means qualities. So the may be manifest, may not be manifest. Whether they're manifest or not, that's not the important thing. If the Srup Lakshana is there, then it's perfect. That is the thing that we are looking for. Like we see that Srila Prabhupada in his preaching, that so many came forward, they're very sincere, and they were dedicated to serving Guru and Krishna. And there, that surrender was there. So that Srup Lakshana was there. Now there may have been some lacking in the Tathastha Lakshanas. Maybe certain qualities were not there. But that's not as important. You might have somebody who is, what is it? Have all the qualities, good qualities of the Brahman. What's that one other mention is about? Yeah, the Muchi Hoi Suchi Hoi. Muchi hoi, suchi hoi, jadi Krishna bhaje. Suchi hoi, muchi hoi, jadi Krishna bhaje. And another one about sat karma nipano bhutra. That one means that he may do all those perfectly. You can't get more moral and wonderful than that. Studying the shastras, teaching the shastras, performing daily your pujas and yagyas, and then doing them for others and guiding others. And then accepting charity, giving charity, or if you find that these are not favorable, then you do even, you beg, or you just pick up the grains that are left in the street, like this. So many high grade, refined character of morality is there. Very, very fine. So one could be very, very moral, but not be God conscious, and then what's the use? You know, it's just like a deer. It's very, very gentle. Very gentle, very nice. You know, very timid, and you know, they have some intelligence. Something happens, they hear some nice music, they'd like to know where it's from. You know, it's like they hear something, like to hear good music. You know, like a cultured person likes to hear good music, goes to, you have a concert, they go to hear the concert. So the deer, they'd like to go hear where the music is coming from. They're gentle, just live off of grass, you know, vegetarian. You know, very, very nice, graceful, beautiful. So many good qualities, but they're a deer, they're in ignorance. So sometimes we have the tendency, due to the contamination of karma, to think that just moral qualities, that makes religion. If that's there, then it's perfect. And other things later, secondary. First we have to make morality. Then it will be very nice. And then other things come or not, okay, we have time. Like that. But this is a contamination of karma, because we think that these gross, the external aspects of the gross and subtle body being controlled by goodness, passion, or ignorance, that this is the important thing. And so we do things, goodness, activities are goodness, results are goodness, so therefore it's good. Or there are those, then it's, you know, intelligence. If it's intellectually very stimulating or exciting, then that's very good. Like that. And then these other activities, those are secondary. First is, you know, what you're thinking, you know, what you have to say, you know, what is, you know, on this point, at that point, you can sit and discuss and, you know, get more technical you can get, the better. You can quote from the shastras, you can quote Sanskrit, you can break things down into syllables and dhatus and all this, then it's very, very good, like that. And then these other things we'll worry about. Activity we'll worry about later until we worked it out, the concept, then how you can do anything, right? You know, what's this, what activity you'll do unless you know what you're doing. So both of these are dependent upon the mind and the intelligence. And both of these then are controlled by, you know, goodness, passion, and ultimately ignorance, because we don't know who we are. So the mana is then there to see that the human being is behaving properly and give the actual religion. And that religion is to know the Lord. So here, then the activities of mana are being inquired about, that they're, you know, something interesting. We may think, you know, just, you know, okay, he's a mana. But he is doing so many wonderful activities, establishing the supremacy of the Lord, establishing the proper religious activity for a living entity. Because the conditioned living entities, they must have some direction, something that they can do to engage themselves in the Lord's service. Otherwise, they become bewildered. They may do any kind of activity. So the idea is every activity, everything that you do, must be connected to the Lord. So the manus, they give that. They make sure that that gets established in each age. So that is the interesting aspect here of the manus. Okay. In the Puranas, then also these different kinds of personalities must be described. The Lord and His creation, and then how Brahma then manifests all that creation. Then the Prajapatis, as we, I think we, yeah, they were before. No, they're also coming. Prajapatis are throughout. The Prajapatis, what they do, and then how the different living entities in the material world are manifested. Then the manus, specifically men, and then after the manus, then the great kings, the great devotional kings, and what they did to properly see that these activities are being followed. It means the manus give the law, and then the kings and sages, then they preach it and cultivate it within the common people. So all these are aspects of the Lord's pastimes. So we see that the Lord includes this variety of incarnations and His devotees. So that whole process of His desire being fulfilled, right? Pastime means it's something that He likes to do, something that pleases Him. So then the pastime includes all this. Sometimes we have a tendency to focus just only on the Lord. Anything outside the Lord is not interesting. But everything goes along with it. Everything goes with the Lord is there, and then also the associates of the Lord, the atmosphere in which the pastime is performed, the whole mood in which it's performed that is there of a particular pastime. And then you have that, there's so many unlimited moods of the Lord, so therefore there's so many unlimited pastimes, devotees, situations that must be there. So then devotee likes to hear these, because there's unlimited situations in life, and so there's unlimited ways we can hear about the Lord in connection with all those situations. So then it becomes something interesting, something like that. One cannot jump from, you know, conditioned life interested in, you know, sense gratification to suddenly just very, very elevated, you know, Brajalila. Means there's something in between, like that. There's a path. Krishna says there's a path. He doesn't say that it's mystic yoga, that you're here on the path and then suddenly you're there on the path. You go through a process. You go through a process. So then in that, then all these things we hear, and that brings us to that process. If you have the goal, you want to get to Vrindavan, then that's your goal. And therefore you see everything in connection with that. But everything between where we are now and Vrindavan is seen. It's not that it's avoided. Like that. You know, just like you say, I want to go from here to Calcutta, but I don't want to see anything in between. So we can't jump. We have to go through. But if we keep Calcutta as the goal, we'll get there, though we'll go through everything else. But if we say, no, we'll just be in Calcutta, then we'll be in Calcutta in our mind. We'll be sitting here, and yes, I'm in Calcutta, and I'm going down Chowringhee and turning into, you know, New Market, and then New Market, and I'm, you know, hassling with all the guys there that want to, you know, sell me dhotis or this or that, or, you know, like this. But you're not, you're here. So it's just mental. Any questions or comments? Yes.
On this point of Svarupa-lakshana, Tathasta-lakshana, the main point of surrender, of course, is the most important one. We may have sort of fallen into the trap of saying, of thinking that, oh, I'm surrendering. You know, maybe I'm preaching or I'm, you know, saying, for example, or doing this Sankirtan or something. And therefore, other qualities, you know, may not be there, cleanliness, truthfulness, proper behavior, they may be lacking. But then it seems after a while that without developing the strength and the other qualities, that the surrender, the quality of surrender in itself may sort of become threatened. It may not be very permanent.
See, there's from our material conditioning, then we generally fall into two traps. One is that we do an activity, and because we've done the activity, we must get a result. You know, it's just the way it is. That's just. I did my work today, I'll get paid. If I don't get paid, then there's something wrong in the system. Right? Doesn't, you know. And we may or may not be interested in the quality of our work. If we're thinking by the quality is better, I will get better pay, we'll be interested in the quality. But if we're not, we just, because I work, I'll get the result, then we don't bother with the quality. The other is the problem is that we think, we intellectualize, and then we think that will give a result. But intellectual doesn't give result. It has to be run through the senses. That's why the intelligence and the senses are both coming out of passion. Because what you think has to be applied. If it's not applied, it doesn't mean anything. Something intellectually thought, until it's applied, has no meaning. You know? So these two must be connected. Krishna was telling Nanda Maharaj that you're doing an activity, but you don't know why. So these two go together. You must know why you're doing it, and you must do it. So that means in the process of purification, this is called buddhi yoga, is that we hear about something, then we must contemplate it, and we must try to understand it and apply it. So when we say it's automatic, means, you know, if you have, you know, if you are thinking the way of, you know, 2 + 2, the automatic thing is you're going to get 4. But you have to go through it. We have a tendency to think automatic means I'll do nothing and it happens. Right? Or I'm going to do it and that gives the result. You know? I'm going to make myself humble. Or I'll just sit back and because I'm chanting I'm just going to be humble. No, it's something in between. That's the difficulty. That's why religion is so hard to understand. Is because it's neither of what we've been doing for the last unlimited lifetimes. We've been doing intelligence with no activity or activity with no intelligence. And now we're supposed to do intelligence and activity together, which is something we've never done before. You know, it's just an absolutely new concept because it's a spiritual concept. So therefore, that's the trouble. We want to fall into one or the other. You know, it's like, you know, logic or sentiment. You know, there's nothing in between. It's not properly applied, you know, logically applied sentiment. No, that you can't have. It's sentiment or logic. You know, there's nothing in between. So one has to see the process. Now, if there's there, it's just like nadanam na janam na sundari. Nam nama kadi bahudami jasaravashati. So there we see that the name is glorious, but I don't have the qualifications. Right? So that means you have to be thinking about the name. Right? You're chanting the name, okay. But what is the process? You're contemplating the chanting and the glories of the holy name and then seeing I don't have those qualities to chant properly. But it's the Yuga Dharma I'm supposed to chant anyway, qualified or not. So then if that contemplation is there, I'm not qualified, what does that create? That creates humility. right? Trinada Dhisanicha. It just creates the next step. Right? But that means you're contemplating that, you're doing. So the activity is there along with the knowledge. So it'll automatically come. You perform devotional activity, jnana and vairagya will come. But you must take that jnana and vairagya and use it for Krishna. That's the sword of knowledge and detachment. It must be used. You don't just sit there and, yes, I have it. No, you have to apply it. How do you know you have it unless it's applied? Right? Like you can tell someone's intelligence by if they can apply it. Right? Someone may have a great theory, but if it can't be done, it's not considered great. Great is that it was thought out, it's practically applied. You know? Or if somebody's doing something great, well, how are you doing that? I don't know. It's just happening. Then, okay, you go find someone else to ask. You know, it's great. They may be a nice example. But you can't get anything from it. So they're doing an activity not knowing. Someone else knows so many things can't do. So you have to find someone who knows and does. So that's the thing. That's what Krishna is telling Arjuna. Arjuna is doing and not thinking. Then Krishna wakes him up and then he thinks, yes, I will think and now I will not do. And Krishna says, no, you're going to think and do. So that's the problem is that we get stuck between these two. We waver from one to the other, flip from, this is what the pendulum is. Right? In anything, your social, your political, your intellectual, you know, your philosophical, these swings come because we go from karma to jnana and back. You know, and now and again we throw in a bit of yoga, you know, for variety. You know, it's like they throw it all out. You know, it's all useless. You know, so then it's just you go back and forth. That means us, the conditioned living entities. So automatic means if you follow the process, it'll automatically happen. But if you don't follow the process, then things are very slow. Automatic doesn't mean no work. That's coming from ignorance, that we're going to get something from nothing. No, activity is there. Krishna wants to taste rasa. He just sits there and tastes rasa, right? No, he performs activity, right? He and his energies perform activity, right? But it's based on the eternal principles, the eternality and knowledge. He wants happiness, so there must be eternity and knowledge. Right? And then happiness is there. So that knowledge means the activities. Right? So therefore that's where happiness is tasted. Is in the activity. That's why the activities of the Lord is the most prominent. Right? The other things are to understand. The other aspects of the technical knowledge is so we understand the pastime. And then we can appreciate the pastime. We know what the goal is, we know what the process is, we know how to get there, and then we focus that on the activity. And it becomes good. That way, automatic happens. Otherwise, automatic's not automatic. Automatic comes with the endeavor. Then, those other lakshanas will naturally come. They'll naturally follow. Does that make sense? Any other questions? Nothing else, nothing else. Sufficiently boring class. What time is it?
Now 15 minutes.
Huh?
Now 15 minutes.
Now 15 minutes.
So it's the if we're performing service without just even though trying to make me happy, do something. So if you do that, then everything will develop eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it necessary to actually have the understanding? Mm-hmm. Understand everything?
Well, deep is one thing, everything's another, like that. It means one can perfect oneself just by understanding one point. You know, like that one Brahmin in South India when Lord Chaitanya was touring. Just the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna, that the relationship was so wonderful that Krishna, here's the Supreme Lord, taking the part of chariot driver. Arjuna, chariot driver is considered not good, right? We see here Arjuna is in a position, and then Krishna is there, and Krishna is his chariot driver. And so then, this is working very nicely. But we see another where you have qualified kshatriya and qualified chariot driver is Karna and Shalya. And then it's just a complete thing of ego, because the chariot driver is considered the lesser position. And so you had the superior person in the lesser position. Shalya is the superior to Karna, but he's in the lesser position. Krishna is superior to Arjuna, he's in the lesser position. But there it's working because of the affection and love between them. So he's just meditating on that one point, and he perfects his life. So many things is not important, it's just the depth of that. And that depth is not intellectual. It's a matter of taste, like that. So because we're used to just the senses and the intelligence, that's what we're used to as fields of activity, like that. So therefore we perform activities in that to try to kickstart this. Is that you're intellectually trying to understand something, then maybe at some point you'll just appreciate the Lord. Right? Okay, here's everybody, there's, you know, somebody's bigger than someone else. And when you get to the top of the pile, you got God. So then maybe you'll just appreciate God just because he's a nice person. Otherwise, then okay, intellectually then we are. Or activity, okay, this activity gives this result, this gives this result, this gives this result, but you know, it's okay, you take the activities of a king, sole sovereign of the planet, everything's going perfectly, there's nothing, not one thing going wrong in his kingdom. Not one thing going wrong. It's all working perfectly, everybody's being dharmic and getting perfect material results. Take that as one unit of happiness. You know? Then, you multiply that times 100, then you get the happiness of the, you know, Gandharvas. Multiply that times 100, 100 times more than that is the happiness of the Gandharvas, like the Brahma Gandharvas, the ones that sing for Brahma. Then 100 times that are the demigods in charge of, you know, your arms and ears and nose and all that. I mean, excuse me, just the general populace of demigods. More than that, the Karmendriya demigods. More than that, than the ones in the big positions. You know, then more than that, 100 times is Indra. 100 times more than that is Brihaspati. 100 times more than that is Brahma. And that, compared to that, that's just a drop in the ocean of Brahmananda. And the Brahmananda is just a fraction or a portion of a drop of the unlimited, shoreless ocean of bhakti. So then we can intellectually go, okay, bhakti gives the bigger result. But still, it's intellectual. At some point, it should be that we appreciate bhakti. So the whole process is that you keep leading the in mind, the intelligence, the senses to Krishna, just like you keep taking the horse to the water. Maybe one day he'll drink. But it's not automatic. So that's what you're doing. You're constantly just taking everything, your body, your mind, your words, and just bringing him to Krishna. At some point you may actually, in devotion, appreciate Krishna. That's what the whole process is. So one's trying to get the depth in it. And depending upon the conditioned nature, you may have, you know, one or many troughs of water to be brought to. You know, your mind works in so many ways you have to engage it, or your intelligence or your senses. So whatever is the manifoldness of one's personality, then all those conditioned states can be engaged in Krishna's service. Right? And then hopefully in one of those, it only takes one, we'll appreciate the Lord. We'll have an attraction to the Lord, or we'll make the Lord the goal of that activity. You know, the goal of our desire. So then that will create the perfection. So it's not a matter of great intellectualizing, it's a matter of, since we have brain, that much should be used. We have senses, they must be, whatever we have should be engaged. So that's the idea, is that to just bring one always near. That's why it's called Mr. Bhakti. So you're taking devotional activity and mixing it with these things. You know, just like we say just chant Hare Krishna, but Hare Krishna is a science. So depending upon us, then we'll start with just chanting. Then we'll notice that, well, there's some offenses to avoid in the chanting. And then this chanting in association of Vaishnavas gives more result. Then if we hear some philosophy from Bhagavatam, it gives even more result. Then if we see the Lord in the temple and do some service in the temple or in the Dham, then we get more understanding, more, the situation becomes better and better. Then in this whole process, there's, you know, 64 aspects in which we can contemplate to see that we're completely engaged. And of those, then these five are, so like this, it just expands and expands how much we need to expand it for our to engage yourself. Okay. So the whole process is how to engage a conditioned living entity. So therefore Manu is very important, because Manu then gets down to how to engage eating, sleeping, mating and defending in the Lord's service. Right? That's the, you know, bottom line. Is that it, okay, if you can just sit down and chant Hare Krishna, then you don't worry about these four. It'll happen anyway. You're supposed to eat, it'll come. You know, if you're supposed to sleep, you know, there'll be some tree, something will be there. Like that. And then, but if you need something more than that, you want, then you need the system that Manu gives. Because it'll tell you how to eat to please the Lord, how to sleep to please the Lord, how to mate to please the Lord, how to defend to please the Lord. Otherwise, then, how will one chant? When chanting 24 hours a day, then no need. But if you're only chanting 2 hours a day, then what do you do with the other 22 hours? You know, then a few hours we do for our morning sadhana. You know, maybe there's some evening sadhana, maybe not. Okay, a few more hours a day, go. Another 3, 4. Okay, so what do we do with the other 16, 18 hours a day? So that's then where all these other aspects come in. Like that. The human needs department, you know, that's Manu. Like that. Bhagavat and Pancharatra are basically the needs of the soul. Pancharatra is where you combine the two, the soul and the body, and then with the emphasis on the soul, a little bit on the body. But Manu means is that emphasis is on the body, how to engage it, to that the soul will ultimately become satisfied. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Well, just in relation to what you were saying about the possibility of perfection by acting without knowledge, if I understood from what you were saying, knowledge meaning sambandham, so if we don't have that understanding of how to relate to Krishna's energies, then there are no attempts, which is why they have to be ministers in that position. So if I make sure you can understand what you're meaning, is that when you're talking knowledge, you're talking sambandham, understanding of how.
Both there and the abhideya, the process, one should understand the process also. So one has to understand the relationship properly, understand the goal properly, and understand the process. So of those, then the biggest branch of knowledge, at least in the beginning, is in sambandha and abhideya, is that you must understand how this works. You know, who you are, who's God, what we have to work with, and then what's the process of the relationship. There's a process of that relationship. So the more one understands according to one's capacity, then the more it keeps one engaged. So if one has more intelligence, then one can use it to understand these things. If one is not so intellectual, then just the basic principle. Basic is that we are servant of God, Krishna's God, material energy is Krishna's energy, and we're supposed to engage the material energy in Krishna's service for his pleasure, and the goal is to develop love for Krishna. You know, his satisfaction is our happiness. So that's the essence of it. And then everything else is expanding from that. So it's So therefore, there's something for everybody. It's just a matter of if you have more intellect, then you engage it. Otherwise, you're going to engage it in something else, you know. And even if philosophy isn't something to engage your intelligence, then you know other aspects of dharma or artha or kama, like this or there, then Krishna gives directions how he would like that to be done. If this body belongs to Krishna and you want to, you know, engage in certain activities within this material world, then how Krishna wants you to do that? It's not our body, it's Krishna's body. So Krishna then gives us how to do that. Then that's the process. That's the whole. Is that okay? Anything else? No. Okay, we'll end here. What? What's the question? Then we'll see if we.
Because while they're writing so much about the private life of Krishna, his private life.
Private life of Krishna.
And his intimate life.
With his private life of Krishna.
And his privacy. Why do they write about his private pastimes if they are not supposed to?
Means it's see it's just like the educational system is writing things for someone to do a doctorate. It's also writing for the nursery school. So it's just everybody should know what to read. So it's not a matter of that the position we're at is the central feature. Where we're at, then we know where we're at, and we read those literatures. And as we advance, these other literatures become obvious. So when we advance, then they'll have some meaning. Otherwise, then they don't have any meaning like that. So it's everything they have to write for everybody. If they only write for Kanistas, how you'll get to Madhyams, how you'll get to Uttams. So they must provide something for everybody. That's why they're the Acharyas. They wrote everything, right? And then Prabhupada then teaches us how to approach what they've written. Right? That's why the present Acharya is important. He teaches you how to approach the previous Acharyas. Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Govra Prema ki.
Satsang with Mahārāja ki.